This is the 13th interview with Sarah Rosner on October 23, 1973. In the beginning of the interview, it was obvious that Sarah was not feeling too well today. She had some problems in speech, wasn't able to concentrate too well, but by the end of the interview seemed to be feeling better. The interview covered a wide range of material, first going back to some questions about the 1939 laundry strike. This interview probably covered in more detail than any in the past the power struggles and her specific position in the union and their attempt to strip her of the power which she had, based primarily on a large popular following. She also discussed her attitude in greater detail towards the leadership in the union, towards Schlossberg, Hillman, and Frank Rosenblum. The interview then proceeded to the power struggles in Los Angeles, her unseating as chairwoman, and the Luart training program that she set up. In a sense, the interview did seem to skip around some, but did follow the chronological sequence and ended with questions about her decision to retire.
I want to go back to the laundry strike again.
Because there
were a couple of things in here. In 1939, there was a strike, a walkout, in July of 1939 of wholesale. This was from cleaning and dyeing plants.
Yeah.
It was involved, doesn't say what local was involved, Local 268. Now that wasn't the same strike that you, that wasn't the laundry strike you were involved in. This is July 1939.
Yeah, that's the same. That's the cleaning and dyes and the laundry. They were together.
Okay, so that was the same one.
Yeah.
And the mayor appointed a commission? Do you recall anything about that?
The mayor in 39, who was mayor?
Bowron.
Who?
Bowron. B-O-W-R-O-N.
I don't remember anybody by that name here. There was Shaw. He was recalled in 38.
But now that strike, the strike you were involved in, was against the cleaning and dyeing firms.
The laundry and the... that was the cleaning and dyeing and laundry. They were together at that time. And now they're kaput, all of them.
Oh. And now, but it was Local 268 that was involved.
268,
in
yeah, right, right.
Okay. Now, in April, there was... This was July, the walkout was, July 1939.
July 1939. Yeah, what's the book happened? Where did you get that information?
That's from this book.
Oh.
Now, but then also, there was a strike involving the Wardrobe Laundry Company.
Well, I told you about that.
And that was Local 357.
That was all together at that time. That was... We were in the same office, as I recall. You see, the cleaners and dyers were controlled by Slim Connolly, the communist. That's the thing there. But the laundry workers, I took care of with Balanov.
I see.
You see, so...
So, But which local was the one that you were involved with the strike?
The laundry workers.
So it was 268?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, what...
No, wait a minute. Now, I was with the wardrobe laundry...
Oh.
The wardrobe...
That was local 357.
I don't remember the number.
Yeah. 357, it says.
I don't remember there was such thing as a... As I recall, it was all together with the cleaners and dyers. It was all together. They at that time, the cleaners and dyers, the government was after them because there was such a scandal about it. It was a terrible scandal.
What was the scandal?
There were fires and... And there was, they ran away with the funds from the union, prior to Jim Connolly.
Oh.
So, after we came in, Balamas and I came after the cleanup. I don't remember all the details about it.
The Wardrobe Laundry Company,
yeah,
the strike started against them.
Yeah.
But it was bigger than that, wasn't it?
What was bigger?
The laundry strike.
Oh, there were all kinds of... But the laundry was about the biggest.
Oh.
In size. They had the most employees, as I recall. I don't remember what the amount, how many workers they employed. Very many. And they... The biggest problem was with the drivers. They were the elite of the industry in general. What a hard time. And mostly blacks and Mexicans. Very few whites.
Mm.
Very few whites. Even I couldn't understand it was Jesus, the names. Jesus, and I used to give them a strike benefit, $3 and $5. The names I recall, I told you. When we had him clinched, I couldn't get a hold of Janice. So he was playing golf somewhere.
Now, at that time, he was acting as the manager?
Yeah.
But this Balanus and you were doing the organizing?
Yeah.
Now,
I don't know what the Balanus was there, right? I was alone. I don't recall.
Now, Sarah, there was some conflict, apparently, between the AFL and CIO.
Oh, sure.
There were some jurisdictional disputes with United Garment Workers. Do you remember any of those here in L.A.?
With the laundry? Sure, there still is. Still exists. They have two unions. There's still two unions.
So what happened when you were working on the laundry strike? You were having troubles also with a union, another union?
No, I didn't have any trouble with it. I didn't. I was interested in organizing, and I did.
Mm-hmm.
I did. And as far as I recall, we were successful in getting him into the union. What happened after that?
Because apparently, this is 1938. This is before the strike you weren't working with.
No, I came in 39, I think.
Well, the year before that, apparently...
They had scandals before that.
The United Garment Workers negotiated contracts with Rosenblum, Kurtzman, and Paramount.
The United Garment Workers, yes, sure.
But then you were involved with the strike with Rosenblum too, weren't you?
There was a strike, but I wasn't connected with it.
Now, what happened in right around the time of this strike in 1939? In March, right around the time of the wardrobe laundry company strike, Peppercorn got arrested. Remember I asked you, I came across a note that said Ben was arrested Well, that was Peppercorn. Now, what was all that about?
And Peppercorn was not involved with the laundry workers.
No, it was right around the same time.
No, remember I was talking about Glickman, where I brought him to be in labor relations board. He framed him up. He framed Peppercorn up.
This Glickman did?
Yeah. So I fixed him up. When I ran into the saloon, it was all a combination of that was later. See, Peppercorn came in after the laundry business.
He was arrested. This was in April 1939.
He came in after the laundry was settled already.
Oh, well, it was settled when? In March, wasn't it? Something like that?
I don't remember.
I think it was settled in March, and then in April is when he was arrested.
I don't remember when the order was settled, but I remember I was very privileged because I couldn't get a hold of to settle. See, I wasn't supposed to. All I was supposed to do is get the people together and see that they joined the union and to sign the agreement with somebody else. Somebody else gets the credit, don't you know?
Yeah, this was the agreement with the Wardrobe Laundry Company, though, where you couldn't find him.
Yeah.
Now, you made a note about Peppercorn, and one of the notes that came across it. Did you go bail him out?
Yeah. Didn't you find one of his letters to me?
No, I never came across anything.
You got it somewhere around. Maybe I'll come across it myself. Must be there, because he thanked me so much. I don't remember what it was that I wrote to him, and he acknowledged that he'll never forget my cooperation with him. People didn't dare to go near the union office, and I didn't give a damn. I dared. I'll find that letter somewhere.
But did you bail him out?
No, the union bailed him out.
Yeah, I mean, did you take the bail?
No.
Because there was a note somewhere where you said Ben was arrested, but that didn't say who it was or anything. And I thought it was something connected with the laundry strike, and it wasn't until I came across this.
See, I had nothing to do with the legal end of it. They had that legal department for that.
Now, Sarah, when did you first met Rose Pizzota when you were booked with?
Yeah.
Was she there the same time you were? She would come visit, or what?
Rose Pizzota was in Brookwood when I was there, yeah.
She was at Brookwood when you were?
We started at the same time. She came, but you see, she went to Brumore.
Oh, first?
First, yes. But I've never gone to Brumore. I went straight to Brookwood. I went from Olive Base to the Gomorrah. You know what that means? They all had preschooling where I, like a blind horse, I went.
Now,
I learned all my life something blindly.
Did you see her after Brookwood before you came to L.A., or in L.A. is the first time you established?
No, accidentally I found her here.
In L.A.?
Yeah.
What? Did you become friends with her? What was that?
No, I didn't. I didn't. I was occupied. I was busy with myself. And then I didn't seek her company very much. She was a nice person. While I was in Brookwood, I didn't want to have anything to do with anybody. I wanted to take in all I could in a short period, absorb everything I could. In 2 years, I wanted to take in a lifetime of study. It was impossible. It's an evident. But it's surprising even to this day, at the age of 80, that some of the things I still use, because I was unable to comprehend at a time, come to me today, while I'm scribbling certain things. just pop up in my mind. They would store it away in my subconscious mind.
You were a better student than I was.
Oh, cut it out.
I can't remember things.
Well, I don't remember what happened in 39. I looked through some of the notes, some of the scribblings. I should have, because I was running a dance, and my father passed away. Was there only a benefit for the laundry workers, by the way? What debt I have, and it's somewhere amongst the scribbling. And I said, a father dies, so what? Life must go on. I didn't stop. I didn't miss the dance. I went and conducted the affairs of the dance. I made some money for the strikers. So I remember these things. Yeah. He said, it's outstanding. My father died. And let alone going home to the funeral, because I don't believe in funerals. Okay, well, all right. It happened to be my father, happened to be my mother, so what? What day did they brought me into this world called the Gebeten? I asked them, it's easier said than done. You see, my emotions always got the... I'm talking, but I believe what I say. But you see, when my mother passed away, I came nearly having a nervous breakdown. But I went on. I conducted the affairs of the year that I prepared for the lonely worker strike. So that I remember. What you're talking about, I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know what you want to know exactly. I know that the strike, generally speaking, was successful. It was successful in this sense. For a bunch of Schwarzer, black men and women, Mexicans, and few white girls. I don't remember of having one white man, but there were a couple of girls there. And it was very difficult to get the black people to come into the union and gain their confidence. And I think that would kept me going. I'm very proud to say that it was going to hell for me. It didn't matter. Not only did I conduct the meetings for them, I cooked for them, I shopped for them, and I had a kitchen there. And I told them to be 4 o'clock or 5 o'clock to help me in the kitchen to prepare food. They were there, and before that, you couldn't get anybody to lift a finger. I gained their confidence. To me, that meant an awful lot. And that was true of the Mexicans as well as the black ones. And the few white ones, there was no question about it. But you see, it isn't... Now, I remember, for instance, thing that happened to me in 1910. It's like, I don't remember so much about this. I can think back about see the faces of 1910. I remember, for instance, in 1910, when I walked the picket line, went through the red light district. And to me, how the hell do I know? I was, this was the 1910, so you figure out how old I was. Anyway, I knew later, at least at that time, I thought it was a red light district. I still believe it was the red light district. There was an I thought she was a who, because she was dressed up and she was painted, and she said, I hope you win the strike. Now, you see, now I remember that. I also remember that we were a bunch of us, the girls went into the hot carriers hall, and there was a furniture store, Chris Hartman's furniture store, because we were singing and flirting with a man that served me. And the first thing I remember, then we went out on the picket line, bing, bang, there's nothing. But to remember what happened, I put up the cook's room together on an expensive little pot. I forgot about it. So what do you want to know?
Did you ever think about trying to start a woman's local in L.A.?
No.
What? How come?
I was let out of the life. That's what I needed. I fought for. I did all I could in the line of, my God, I was trying to promote women's activities. All around, I tried to send them to summer school and all that. I did everything in my power to get them active, put them on the executive board and joint board and all sorts of things. And then send them to conventions. Whatever I could use my influence, I did. I promoted them for a better position. I did all that. But the separate local, what? They had no membership here.
Oh, it's just that the union here was
in
such bad shape?
Yeah, you still haven't got it. You still haven't got it. And this idiot that he put down here all together, you see, now what else do you want to know?
Now, what, we started to talk last time about the election in 1953, the shop election for chairman.
Yeah. Well, the election was, I wanted to give up. I was getting tired and I wanted somebody else to take it over, but they did it in a very nasty way. You know, as I said, very few people wanted to sacrifice, do things. So I figured there were 150 people and there were 200 ballots cast. And he swears up and down he had nothing to do with it. Anyway, that was defeated in a very dirty way. They wouldn't even let me make a living. Because they all deny it now.
What, you start having trouble in the shop again?
Yes.
What kind of problem?
Didn't you come across it in there?
I came across this business about Enrico.
And Balanz. Not Balanz.
Balanz. Something like that.
Yeah.
Now, he was the foreman or what? What was he?
He was supposed to be the head man there.
Oh, so in the shop? Not the union man, the manager, with manager.
Yeah.
So he got...
Yeah, he worked hand in hand with the newly elected chairman.
Oh, I see. Yeah, that's what I wanted to know.
Yeah.
Okay.
And what the business thing.
And so they reported you for bad... In fact, you were fired once in 1956.
I was fired. I come down to the union, and I went to the business agent. He didn't want to see me. So I went to the manager, and he sent me to the business agent. Look, you know, then I went back to the business agent. He says, get the hell out of here. I says, you son of a bitch, you get the hell out of here. This is my union. You know, well, I'm... And now, both of them, they kiss me when they see me.
Was that Brock, who was the business agent then?
Yeah. He couldn't help it. See, he had to take orders from him. Because they didn't, neither of them wanted to risk their jobs. So, to give you, I just reminded him. I says, Harry, you can't pull it. This is going to be my last convention. I want to go to the convention.
What year was that?
This was before I retired.
That 56?
50, Yes, I think it was 56. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, because I retired in 58. I said, this is going to be my last convention. I want to go to the last convention. I ran after them, by the way. I ran after I was retired. So, Harry was a business agent at the time. He came back and told me, he doesn't want to budge. Posner doesn't want to budge. So I reminded him last week. He said, I know. You see what I'm trying to point out? Their soul wasn't their own. I don't know whether you can comprehend it or not. Did you ever work for anybody? Well, you have to take orders, no?
Yeah.
Or your job. Now, how many people were there?
Well, Sarah, couldn't you have gone to the local and be elected by the local as a delegate?
Well, what?
To go to that convention.
Not when they lay down the law and they have their stooges. Don't you see how politics work, the law? How do you think I had the power to elect Harry or Zussman or the other one? At the same day, I had the votes in the shop. I could have elected anybody. That was the rule. That's how things work. But you see, the only difference is, I suppose, what you would call scientifically benevolent. One is a benevolent dictator, the other one is a rude dictator. I realize all these things. That's what it was.
So you went to him first and told him you wanted to go. You didn't even bring it up in the local. You knew that unless they were going to go along.
Well, you see, I could have. I was one to get those things, but I had a following. And I was, you have to be pretty strong. I put that in Chicago against Hillman, against Frank, against the whole lot when I was running for business agent. I was a little bit younger, and the machine wasn't quite as strong as they were. I was from Hillman down, they didn't want me to run a business agent. I was threatened. I told him to stick it up there behind, you know. I was elected. But you see, the day when they got the machine and they worked with them, it's pretty hard, and it can be done, and it is being done. You see, the rank and file today is waking up. And that's what I kept on saying all along. I was brave. I wasn't kosher. I was never a yes man. I didn't belong. I never wanted to hurt the organization. And individuals, yes. And not out. I still maintain to this day. I had an argument when I was down the other day with somebody on the same ground. Somebody told me that they would they file suit against an official. I said, what the hell of a kind of a union person are you? It reflects on the union. They don't take it that you're suing the individual. It's the union that's fault. People don't understand that. That's why I never attacked an official in an open meeting. Now, very few people will agree with me on that. Much I didn't. You see, according to the letter, the letter. Now, I didn't go for that kind of stuff. To me, like I said, maybe I was too extreme, just as I was in my religion. I was all the way. I was religious, I was all the way. But I took on, I believed in the union, but not worshipping an individual. The principle of unionism, brotherhood. I don't mean just lip service. people out. Well, they helped themselves, and they did it, but there were very few people that stuck it out, sticking to the original principle. They used it as a stepping stone. It was late last week, Wednesday. I pointed out and I called him and asked me, are you going to see this one for what? It's not going to be the reflection on him. It's going to be a reflection on the amalgamated. That's why I never wanted to give me. I didn't want anybody to know did I want anybody to know that Pearl was the son of a bitch? Did I want it in writing? I didn't want. But this is something different. First of all, it's for the hereafter. It's good to know that everything wasn't hot for Tatsy. But certainly to use it to encourage people to join the union, it's for scholars to know what really the union consisted of. It wasn't all holy. The best. There were probably three people that I know of. There were fathers more concerned that I can point out. Three people.
And who were
they? Oh, you were one of them. That's in Schleitig. Well, one of them was Schlossberg. He was an idealist. I wouldn't put him in that classification. I wouldn't put Frank in. Frank was a leader. I think he was superior to leadership to Hillman. Hillman was, I agree with some of the things that Landry Coe states about him being an optimist. In a way, he was an idealist. He wasn't out for money. He didn't die a rich man. Hillman didn't die a rich man. Schleswig, Frank had more money, left more money than any of them. Not from the union. He was very conservative investor. And if the union stamped, he was the same thing about the union. Money. But Frank, I looked up to as a leader what he has done for the general membership. You see, as a person, I liked Levine.
But you wouldn't put Levine in the same category with Schlossberg, would you?
No. The Schlossberg to me was like a rabbi. Like my father used to go on holidays to a certain chosen rabbi, Rabbi Mordecha. Went to far away from home. He used to bless us before he'd go away. But he'd go. Schlossberg was more of a rabbinical type. I used to say this. In open meetings, Hillman is the body of the organization, Schlossberg is the soul. That's the way it appeared to me. As a youngster, I said that. So that's...
Well, Sarah, was the whole time you were in L.A., was there anybody in the L.A. organization that you really respected?
That I respected? This was such a... I would find a Hungarian expression much better than an English. It's a place where they call it oranges and nuts. It wasn't a stable place. I told you, people were not stable mentally. First of all, you couldn't get a job. In 1938 and 39, I remember telling, I told you, I don't want to repeat myself. There was one man, I think he's still alive, I hope so, anyway, see the coming. He died for me so that I can have a job. I mean, condition was so, so terrible. So, there was Francis Hilda, who was out here before me, Sadie Goodman, Charlie Rudnick, they out of their meager income they would collect among themselves and pay rent for a place to hold meetings apart from the union office. I wasn't here at the time. When I came already, they were more or less they had a union hall. What a place it was. And when I took charge, they started to hate me because I didn't allow them to play cards. I was strict. I was no good. I myself play cards, you see. But the union to me was so holy. It's a library, go. Use it. Play cards home, all you want. The union wasn't made for that. And now it's criticized. I didn't allow them to play the horses in the shop. So the cutters fought me, and that's why they told me I was defeated. I don't know. So they defeated themselves because of that. They didn't hurt me. They did me a favor because maybe I would have, I don't know, I couldn't have worked much longer anyways. I wouldn't have retired. I didn't want to retire. When this happened, I don't know why I'm rambling along like this. I wanted to prepare myself to do what I thought I'd be doing. Because I dreamed of scribbling all my life. So for two years, I could have taken it easy. I didn't care what they did to me.
The 2 years before you retired to me.
Yeah.
Well, Sarah, it sounds like you had a fair amount of power in L.A.
I had a lot of power.
Until they kicked you out of the gym.
They defeated me, so-called.
But was that an attempt to strip you of any power? Is that what that was?
Of course, and that came from the top. I feel that it was with Frank's knowledge. They would never admit to it. I knew it because I asked him to take me up to send me to Arizona because I was sick. I didn't. And the first scholarship was awarded to one of the shop trailers out there. Did you come across that either?
I don't think so. I saw the letter where you asked him to go to Arizona.
Yeah, well.
That was in the end of 56 already. See, it sounds like you started to have a lot more problems in 56. You were no longer chairwoman after 53, right?
It's a funny thing. There are things that they tell me now, actually I don't believe, I didn't believe it then. I knew people that I took in and I took to my heart. I never took to my heart. People that I took in from there, they went to complain against me. And I have the record to prove otherwise, certain things, certain allegations that they made. You know, they all come out after.
Oh, this was during the fight about the chairman?
Yeah.
What kind of allegations did they make?
about work, that I was taking more work for myself. It's such a odd minute. Well, is there anything else?
Well, Sarah, why did this man that you picked to be your successor, why did he pull out? Do you think that he was in collusion with the others?
No. He was a nice young man. See, I wanted a young woman. I wanted a colored woman, in fact. I wanted a Schwartz. And I didn't win. She didn't want. So with this young professor, he was an intelligent boy. He was active, and whatever I put him on, he was on the educational committee, on the library committee, whatever he put on, what else he wanted. If he's active in the union, that's all I was interested in. So I thought he'd make with me being around him. And why, do you think they'd let him work after that?
Oh, he lost the job then?
Sure. They made it impossible for him to say. He's better off too. I mean, business is he's financially better off. I mean, such a tricks, it's a shame to have things like that on record, but that's what happened.
Well, Sarah, why do you think they picked that point to try and dethrone you? Because you...
They knew that I wanted to give up. They knew. I told them.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing I wanted is to guide him. I said, see, my belief is I don't believe in a person monopolizing a job for a lifetime, an officer holding a job for a lifetime. But I do believe you acquired a certain amount of knowledge that benefits the membership as a whole. Use them. So I figured as long as I'm there, I guide him until he gets on his feet and he'll know as much about it. Now, this Blackford, he became manager. I told him before, I told Frank, because they point out, this one I made, that one I made. You encourage them, you know. The present manager I had something to do with his. He was manager in San Francisco first, and now he's with Francis here. There's so many people that I inspired. Now, I don't believe in people holding a job forever. No one person is indispensable. I don't care who he is. But that doesn't say that you should throw him on that. Use him. And that's how I wanted to be used. I want to be used today. Because after I retired, I mean, I was called out. I went to speak to some locals after this business, some other businesses. I saw your letters where they asked me to go out to San Diego. Halt, don't go. I shouldn't go. He said, we're still afraid. I mean, such a...